This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. The point of view of Brussels, NATO itself. Jens Stoltenberg, the General Secretary of NATO, has been very blunt since the Zaporizhia incident that NATO will defend every inch of its territory, meaning that the threat of a nuclear facility being attacked, leading to radioactivity in the air, as it did in Chernobyl, which would necessarily put at risk Poland, Romania, the whole of Eastern Europe, that would be regarded as an attack. So, Professor, since the Bundestag decision led by Chancellor Scholz last Sunday, do you measure that NATO now has awakened? The famous book by John Kennedy and its colleagues, Why England Slept. Has Europe has slept these many decades since the end of the Soviet Union. Is it out of bed? Is it stretching? Is it ready to punch?
Well, I think that they're starting to get out of bed. I think the Germans, above all, are waking up. But the problem is that they have put themselves in a position where there's nothing they can really do. I believe that the Chinese say, they have a proverb, to watch a fire across a river. And we Americans are in the position of watching this big fire far away, thousands of miles away in Ukraine. Now, of course, it threatens the balance of power on which are the peace of the United States, the security of the United States, depends. But the Europeans have a war that's a block away. And some Europeans, I guess none of them remember, but twice in the last century, there were Europe-wide wars, which devastated. Now, there is not a single NATO military that is anything but weak. The Germans, even the French, the British, they're accustomed to free riding with the Americans. And there's no sign of the Americans this time. And they don't really know what to do. Prime Minister Johnson is very, very worried about the shelling of the reactors, which is exactly right. This is insane behavior. That nuclear cloud, it will go to Russia too. I mean, let's not forget that. But there's actually nothing much that the British can do. They certainly can't master this crisis. And it's only going to be resolved if some strong figure takes charge. President Macron had a long conversation with Putin, the gist of which was the five words, it will only get worse. And that's true. But what can France do? France is capable of launching a nuclear strike against Russia. But France has no army, no navy, etc., by comparison. And they're not in a position to do much. And in fact, right now, they're doing nothing. So I would say that when it comes to Europe, they have chosen to be minor league players, and they can't suddenly get up into the major leagues. The U.S., on whom the Europeans have misguidedly depended, has made the decision in this case and over the last 20 years or so to become relatively minor league compared to what we were. But we at least can do something. We have weapons we can supply. We have expertise. We have satellites and so forth and so on. We have very good aircraft. But poor old Europe, they have a fire at their door. And think of the colonial American settlement, old wood. The fire is the door, and they can't even manage a bucket brigade. And this is not something that could be fixed quickly. So I think that Europe basically is just going to have to hope that it doesn't get too bad. Because to fix the defects that currently undermine their position totally, I think they're going to do it, but it's going to take some years to do so.
A distinguished columnist in Europe in the papers that I can read, the English language, Financial Times, London Telegraph, London Times, The Guardian, have talked about the situation in Europe is now such that all of the assumptions of post-war security in Europe are gone. The map will be redrawn. That in itself is striking to me because we have to look past where we will reach in the 21st century, Professor, and to what our sons and granddaughters will inherit. And what we're witnessing right now is that the bear of the 19th century, is no more trustworthy without the Soviets than it was with the Soviets. And the alliance between the bear and the dragon right now is the future right in front of us. So Europe has time, not necessarily to relieve Kyiv of its troubles, but it has time to rebuild its security understanding. Can it do it without the United States? Because, Professor, I observe that over the last 100 years, the U.S. has been very slow to reinforce Europe. We know this in 14. We know this in 39. Can Europe now support itself without the U.S.?
Well, I would say that the kind of security architecture that we're going to have to put in place by necessity, however this thing is resolved, is going to be Eurasian. In other words, it's got to deal with the whole Eurasian landmass from Vladivostok to Calais. And that means that, by definition, Europe cannot do that single-handedly. So we're going to need people of vision and understanding and logic and the ability to get things done to put together a new security architecture, which actually could be very good, but it's going to have to be Eurasian in scope. It's going to have to deal with the problem that the dragon is causing in the Pacific, as well as the problem that the bear is causing right now along the Volga, but it could be along the Elbe. I mean, if we feed the bear a country that they've just invaded, as the French say, appetite comes with eating. And it may be that at some point the bear will overeat, but we can't count on that. So the security apparatus, the security structure, the alliance structure, the distribution of nuclear weapons and so forth, we have to design this to fit the whole heartland of Eurasia. We've got to keep that secure. And if we can keep that secure from the east and west, then the dragon and the bear can hug each other, which they actually don't like to do very much. But it will be very difficult for them to pose a threat to their neighbors.
A vision, Professor, as you were speaking. We know what Berlin looked like in 1945. Is that coming Moscow's way?
Oh, you mean, are they gonna get in a war which is going to lead to the destruction of Moscow?
Yes. Are they in it now? This will grow over years. It will have phases, but that's what the Second War was. It was a phase of 1914.
Well, I think that's right. I think the great danger we face here is that this war, I feel now that it is slipping out of control, and wars have a way taking over and running, driving themselves. They're self-driving machines, killing machines, and the people who started them somehow lose control over them. And I pray to God that nowhere sees the kind of destruction you're talking about, but unless something happens very soon, Kiev and the Ukrainian cities are going to face this kind of destruction. And as Clausewitz points out, violence has a tendency to go to the extreme. That process is going to draw everybody in, and Moscow could well be a target. Certainly the European country, former East European countries, the Swedes, the Finns, they can all hit Moscow. They can cut off St. Petersburg. If Russia gets involved escalates this beyond where they are now, we really have to halt it. If we have to halt it now, or it's going to turn into one of the military equivalent of one of these forest fires that's devastated the American West.
On September 4th, 1941, the USS Greer, a U.S. destroyer 175 miles from Iceland, mail and supplies, she got a warning from British warships that U-boats were in the area. The Greer made sonar contact and attacked. They dropped eight depth charges. They're not sure if they sank a U-boat. However, on October 17th, USS Kearney, a U.S. destroyer, part of an escort for SC-48, a resupply of Britain with food before Pearl Harbor, was forced to go dead in the water when a British corvette cut across the bow. The U-568 took the opportunity, fired a spread of torpedoes, one hit the Kearney. 11 seamen were dead. The Kearney was able to make port. October 30th, 1941, the USS Robin James, a Clemson-class destroyer, was attacked by a U-boat U-552. It sank quickly. 100 men were lost. All three incidents were reported loudly in American press, and each time President Roosevelt declined to go to war with Germany. However, we're walking up the escalator ladder. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Professor. Those incidents are right in front of us. They're coming. There'll be incidents in Poland. There'll be incidents in Kaliningrad. There'll be incidents on the Romanian border. Each time, the president will decline to declare war until the American people are educated. Is it inevitable, what I've just described?
Well, the word inevitable usually means possible, because most things are impossible. Nothing is inevitable. The Russians could stop this war right now and spare Europe ghastly destruction. But whether they have the mechanisms in place to hit the off switch is a question. What you describe is exactly the way wars begin, with an educational process, which leads you to enter them long after the optimal time would have been. And I expect that there are going to be more and more incidents, as you say, unless Russia hits the off switch, and that at some point, all of our careful avoidance of violating NATO rules and our discussion about the future status of Ukraine and all the rest, they're just going to be last week's papers, because the issue is going to be a hot war that is the result of all sorts of military incidents of the sort that you describe. I mean, you can't have a war with tens of thousands of people fighting, hundreds of planes and ships and stuff, and not do damage early on. And right now, we're not paying attention. But at some point, it will become unavoidable.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, international relations, commenting on Brussels' point of view right now. One more, Moscow's point of view, when we come back. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.